Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Welcome to the Julia Hartley Brewer Daily. If you've missed any of my talk radio breakfast show, don't worry. We've put some of the punchiest bits of this morning's show into a bite-sized podcast, the Julia Hartley Brewer Daily. Enjoy.
The latest unemployment figures are out just in the last few moments, and they have shown we now have an unemployment rate of 4.1%. The number of UK workers on payrolls fell by 695,000 between March and August, obviously due to the impact of the pandemic and the lockdown. Fewer workers have been away on furlough, and average hours rose. The number of job vacancies, though, has continued to recover into August. But we are looking at an unemployment rate that has gone up just to from month to month, 0.2%. It's gone up 0.3% in total. So things are actually looking a lot better from the month of August than perhaps many would have feared when we're looking back at the lockdown earlier on. But let's talk to Justin Urquhart-Stewart. He's business commentator at Seven Investment Management and joins us now. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Julia.
I mean, obviously, there are really no good news figures these days. But is this unemployment rate, is this better or worse or just what you feared?
Well, it's actually slightly better. Rather perversely, even as you say, the unemployment rate's gone up to 4.1%, actually less than I thought it'd be. Bear in mind, we do have the protective cover of furloughs still operating.
Yeah.
So as that winds down, you're going to see a lot more coming out, and I'm afraid the job outlook is not good. Perversely, because of the way the figures are calculated, actually the employment rate's actually gone up slightly. And what that means is actually people who had actually signed themselves off as actually not actually in the workforce has suddenly found themselves signing back up and going back into the workforce. But that's a relatively obscure number, but
yeah.
No, that's a positive bit. What you are seeing, though, I'm afraid, is the overall trend. You're going to see as we come out of this, the fog of furlough will start showing actually there'll be more jobs being lost. And you can identify the sectors, it's arts, it's leisure, all of those areas which are particularly going to be hit at the moment. However, what you are seeing is more people actually going back to work in the manufacturing areas and those sort of issues. But the issue is, can they start growing? And the answer is they only start growing once the economy starts moving at a greater pace. And that's not what we're seeing at the moment.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, this is the big fear, isn't it? The furlough scheme has changed constantly from August, September onwards. We know at the end of next month, it is coming rapidly at us, isn't it? The October 31st, the furlough scheme ends. And we've been told repeatedly by Rishi Sunak, the Chancellor, there will be no extension to the scheme, although lots of people crying out for there to be some sort of sector-by-sector help, but maybe not across the board. And I think we all understand you can't sort of preserve the economy as it was in March. It's going to change inevitably, but there is still some concern. When do we expect a lot of these redundancy notices to go out there? For a lot of people who've been told, look, you're on the furlough scheme, but basically there isn't going to be a job for you to go back to. That's at end of October when there's going to be some serious costs for the employer for keeping anyone on. Is it sort of 45 days notice, in which case we would be expecting, you know, any time around now, an awful lot of redundancy notices to go out?
It is in this next quarter, unfortunately. That's when you're really going to be seeing it out. The good employers would have actually been already telling people in advance, saying, look, I'm sorry, it looks as though we can't do it. Here's an indication of what's going to be happening. And by the way, here's notice. Others, I'm afraid, you know, have been waiting to see what the recovery is looking like and then making up their minds, making their decision. I think there's a good chance that we may follow what you've seen in France and Germany is an extended furlough system, as you say, nuanced by sector, rather than just saying, just falling off a cliff and saying, well, that's it. No, that's the end of it.
Yes.
That is, I think, is just overly dramatic. And of course, the only bit of good news you've got here is, of course, as you've talked about before, the Chancellor has the ability to actually draw on more money because they have this wonderful mechanism of quantitative easing where we can print the sodding stuff.
And have done
very consistently.
But it's course, not. It's not. We're not waking up to. So this is not sort of really, really bad news. I mean, look, we are still looking at. I mean, the worst case scenarios for our unemployment rate will be pretty much where France started from for theirs. I mean, it's not all bad news.
Oh, our economy was in very good shape. Yeah. Let's we can throw ourselves into the slough of despond if we so wish. But actually, our economy was in good shape, but we were heading for a slowdown anyway. We even have had two technical quarters of shrinking economy, which is comes out of recession, but people get very worked up over that word. We were actually heading to a slowdown in the cycle, but we were in a much better position. Okay. The problem is actually now going to be employment growth. And employment growth will come about through confidence. And of course, one of the issues, which the word we never like talking about when we're talking about employment, is the issue of Brexit.
Because I was just going to come on to that. How convenient. Well, yeah, I mean, The Guardian's got a front page today. Revealed, number 10 is warned of 7,000 lorries stuck in post-Brexit chaos. Secret report predicts long delays for freight to Eurostar passengers. This, of course, one of those wonderful, reasonable, worst-case scenario reports. They always seem to leave out the locusts and the asteroid attack. I never understand why. Godzilla isn't even mentioned at all, so they've obviously not gone through the report properly. This is still looming, and I think a lot of people think, oh, well, it's all done and dusted, but we are getting some pretty nasty stages of the negotiations. I think it was always going to be thus, given how the EU's behaved so far since 2015, not even 2016. How concerned are people in business about prospects of long queues at Dover or of a no deal Brexit entirely?
Well, I'm sure Godzilla's lurking somewhere out in the English Channel, just waiting to wade his way through onto land. But no, there is a concern. It's only really a matter of getting the organisation right. We've known about this for some time. The problem is we're waiting for the politicians to finally get a decision. Businesses just need time to try and plan all of this. So it is a concern. But of course, it's in no one's interest on either side of the channel to have this. So the reality is likely to be, yes, we may end up with checks, but not everything's going to be checked the entire time. There may be systematic checks. We're checking anyway for other issues, such as people on lorries who shouldn't be there anyway, but actually trying to make sure that actually controlling levels of imports and those of errors, a lot of that doesn't have to be done at the border. So you can actually do that elsewhere. So I suspect what you're going to find is a lot more adjustment in terms of the rules if we don't get a proper agreement by that stage. But I still think we will get one because, frankly, it's in nobody's interest to do so.
Absolutely. I completely agree with you. I think there's going to be a lot of anxious tears being spilt, but I think it's all going to end up just fine in the end. But that said, I'm perfectly happy with the no deal either way. Justin Urquhart-Stewart, always a pleasure to talk to you.
Talk Radio Breakfast with Julia Hartley Brewer and The Times. Be well informed.
Sir Ian Duncan Smith, former Work and Pension Secretary, former Tory leader and still MP, of course. Good morning to you.
Morning, Julia.
Good morning. I mean, we've just had a whole string of former MPs, such as former prime ministers, former attorney generals, and even a former chancellor, Sajid Javid, criticising the government for breaching international law by attempting to rewrite the withdrawal agreement agreed only last year with the EU. Lots of criticism that you know, we're putting ourselves on the same par as Russia, China, Iran, North Korea, breaching international law. Do you think this is a significant issue and are you worried about it?
Well, it's a significant issue. I will say, by the way, I'm the only one who was either an ex-leader or ex-conservative prime minister that actually supported the government last night. So I wear that as a badge of honour in this particular respect, because I was also the only one of them that actually voted for Brexit. Anyway, moving on swiftly to answer your question, I think it is, of course, a serious issue, because the government coming to this point, recognising the weaknesses within the treaty. Some of us were warning them about that. And that was the reason why Clause 38 of the Withdrawal Act was put in there by many of us, and the government agreed, which makes a very clear statement saying, notwithstanding essentially anything inside this act, nothing shall affect the right of the Parliament to establish its sovereignty and to make its laws relevant to the United Kingdom. And I think that's the key element that the government has decided to rely on in the process of changing the nature, potentially, of our relationship. And it's because the EU has, frankly, and this is absolutely clear as day, refused point blank to negotiate in a fair and reasonable way to cover these issues about how the UK would find it intolerable if they were not to grant third party status to the UK in terms of goods, which would mean we'd cut off ourselves from Northern Ireland.
Yeah, I mean, this thing, a lot of, again, for most of us who've got lives, children, jobs, yeah, people absolutely. Are in a third party status, people, what on earth is that? And this is basically the whole, we're not part of the EU, we're not one of the 28 member states, but we're given a special status. So it's they trade with, you know, other countries around the world, but some countries are granted this status where there's sort of automatic approval. We know that your food standards are at a reasonable level or higher or same level, and therefore you can export foods to us as a given. Now, they know what our food standards are because we've been in the EU for the last 40-odd years, and we also have, most of the time, and certainly right now, have higher food standards than many countries in the EU. For the EU to claim that this is a big concern for them, that we may one day change our food standards, and even if we did what everyone else would do, just notify the WTO and then change, and then the EU could accept or not accept. It's a total farce from them to pretend this is a genuine concern for them, isn't it?
Yeah, it's actually quite typical how the way by the EU behaves in negotiations. That's why pretty much every country that's negotiated with them ends up hating them in regard to this. And the WTO too finds, I mean, if you look at, as regards breaking international law, the EU has a phenomenal track record of breaking international law. It's not implemented any of the WTO rulings, which are supposed to have direct effect. They simply brush them aside. Germans have done much the same. You know, the reality is we even already have failed to implement international law when we refused to give prisoners voting rights, quite rightly, because that was meant to be implemented without any debate or argument. So, you know, we get a little bit hung up on this and the public doesn't know what this is about. The truth is, the real point about this is, one, the EU is threatening to say to us, well, we might just say, no, you don't have the right to sell your goods because you won't have that status. And two, the big important internal matter is by doing that, they would force us to cut ourselves off from Northern Ireland with full tariff checks and regulatory checks between goods going between Ireland and the rest of GB. And of course, the Act of Union makes it absolutely clear that all of the parts of the United Kingdom can never have any tariffs or any regulatory barriers between them. So this would breach our very domestic and important vital constitutional laws. So the government's right to say to the EU, I tell you what's going to happen. If you decide not to negotiate properly and not to come to the Joint Committee and get rid of this threat, then we will have in our back pocket legislation which basically says this withdrawal agreement has simply failed and we're going our own way and goodbye to you. So that point is part of the negotiation, the government's right to do this. And I simply say to my colleagues, honestly, you have to trust the government to get on with this. We need to tell the European Union they cannot go on trying to bully us. We are a sovereign nation now.
OK, just finally, I want to ask you just about the front page of some of the papers today about this rule of six and the sort of the vagaries of this law. No birthday parties, but you can go grouse hunting, things like that. Irritating a lot of people. Also calls for government ministers saying that, you know, we should be effectively grassing on our neighbours, snitching on them if they have seven people for a birthday party, their child, that they should dob them into the police. Would you do that?
No, not really, unless I saw something appalling. I went out and patrolled the police the other night, late into the hours, early hours of the morning, and there were a couple of incidents where there were maybe 100, 150 people revelling, you know, silent discos, all that sort of stuff, very close to each other. Clearly, that's not allowed, and the police need the powers to break that up if necessary. But, you know, if somebody has, I don't know, seven people in their garden and you're peering out the window and you say, I'm going to report them to the police, I think this is where the problem comes. My sense all through this is, the honest truth is, we go on doing this and then we bounce back, then we lock down again, and we need the economy moving, and we need people, most people, genuinely, the vast majority of people get it. And they are, the reason why we're not seeing huge hospital rises or deaths is because most people are already following common sense principles. We should trust the British public much more and lecture them a lot less. That's my general view.
So, Ian Dunk-Smith, thank you very much indeed for that.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound,
and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Talk Radio Breakfast with Julia Hartley-Brewer and The Times. Know your Times.
Right now, I'm delighted to welcome the Home Secretary, Priti Patel, to the show. Good morning to you, Home Secretary.
Julia, good morning.
Lovely to speak to you. Very interesting news this morning in terms of how many people you're recruiting to join the police force. 100,000 or more people have applied to join the police force after your big recruitment drive last year. How many of those have actually been taken on?
So far, we have 4,336 new police officers. Bobby's out on the beat, on patrol, and that's since our recruitment drive, which was announced last year. So the recruitment drive is going well. We've got another TV and radio campaigns that are being launched today as well. And I think it's pretty inspiring, actually, that 100,000 people have chosen to apply to join the police, to go on our front line. Julia, you've heard me say this many, many times before. You know, I think our police officers are heroes across our communities. You know, they do so much fantastic work. They're on the front line day in, day out. These are the very people that work day in, day out, night and day to keep us safe. And they are remarkable individuals.
They're working night and day to keep us safe. A lot of people have been very unhappy about how a lot of the policing has been carried out during the lockdown, failure to police, big protests. And yet we're told the police need to get involved if we have a birthday party in our back garden or in our home for seven people. Should the police be spending their time dealing with that?
Well, I think first and foremost, when it comes to dealing with crime, protest activity, we've seen so much take place over recent months. And we've also seen our police officers, I think, do heroic things throughout coronavirus in terms of stopping the spread of the disease. And of course, through that, they have been enforcing, as you know, fixed penalty notices where people have been non-compliant. And that's effectively what they're being asked to do once again, to fine people in the same way in which, Julia, they were fining people with illegal raids, mass gatherings, levelling fines and penalties of up to £10,000, confiscating.
Oh, goodness me. Apologies. We seem to have just lost your line, Home Secretary. You've just frozen on the video screen. Apologies for that. I hope we can get the Priti Patel back. I don't know what's going on there. Oh, the joys of lockdown interval. Well, not lockdown, but social distance interviewing. So hopefully we're going to try her back on the line. Meanwhile, Bobby Freeman, you'll have to help me fill in some time while we try and get the Home Secretary back on the line. Actually, apologies. We have got, I think, Priti Patel is now back on the line. Home Secretary, can you hear me okay?
I can hear you.
Oh, good. We've got you back. Yeah. That's good news. But there are a lot of people, and I've got very good friends who are police officers, and they echo what a lot of other officers I've spoken to said, which is that they feel that, you know, it's all very well. They want to do the job. They joined, you know, no one's joining the police to make good money. They're joining the police force because they want to do a good job. They want to help protect people. And they feel they don't have the resources and they don't have the backing from senior staff in terms of doing their job. There's whole, you know, we had all these issues about people taking the knee, failure to intervene when people are defacing, say, the Winston Churchill statue in Parliament and the like, that they are having their hands tied behind their backs. Is there any point in recruiting all these extra police officers if we're not going to allow them to do the job that they want to do and the public wants them to do?
The public want the police to enforce the law. And it's right that the police do that. And quite frankly, when we see 100,000 people wanting to join the police, they themselves are motivated, obviously, to serve their public, serve the community, keep us safe, and also be part of law enforcement. And I absolutely commend that. I think that's right. I've been vocal on this whole point in the past as well. I don't think police officers should be taking the knee. I've said that previously. I want to see our police officers enforce the law. And I will give them, you know, the resourcing that they need, the backing that they need to do that. And of course, you know, as someone that, you know, I don't have operational command of policing, but it is down to their police chiefs, the police leaders, to empower their officers to use the tools that they have and also to encourage them, basically, to get out there and police and enforce the law. There is nothing that is stopping the police from doing that. They have the powers, they know the law, they are, you know, the purveyors of police enforcement and law enforcement. Okay. They should absolutely be out there doing that.
Well, I mean, one of my acquaintances said, you know, they've got a situation where they've had drug dealers meeting in the house opposite them for years and years. The police refused to turn up. She said, oh, great, now if they meet in groups of more than six, now the police will turn up. There is a feeling from a lot of people that the police turn a blind eye to a lot of crime that is very serious. And we've seen this horrific spate of stabbings in recent years, particularly in capital city, but in other major cities around the country. And yet they're going to be people telling you off, you know, in the lockdown for sunbathing in the park, or telling you off if you've got more than six people in your back garden or in your home. If we have policing by consent, it's very important that the police are seen to be on the side of the law-abiding citizen. A lot of people don't feel that anymore. Is there anything you're going to do about that?
Well, I think, first of all, when it comes to criminality, when it comes to violence and drugs and things of that nature, excuse me, it's absolutely right that the police are out there enforcing the law. You've actually mentioned a really important and serious point, which is about serious crime and serious violence. You mentioned our capital city. Now, of course, the individual responsible for policing across actually the country, capital cities, etc., etc., the police and crime commissioners. And it's right that they are held to account. It's absolutely right that they are held to account by the taxpayers, by the public, in terms of the policing decisions that they are making. Now, I think it's an absolute outrage, quite frankly, that we see serious violence increase on the streets of London. We are doing everything, I'm doing everything as Home Secretary, to ensure the police are equipped and empowered, you know, stop and search, for example, having the tools to do serious violence reduction orders, which we announced yesterday. Many of our manifesto commitments are absolutely there to ensure that police officers tackle these most horrendous crimes to try and save lives rather than seeing gangs and gang violence on the streets of our capital city.
Okay.
So these are issues that have to be picked up. But you've also mentioned this whole issue about policing throughout coronavirus. First and foremost, it's absolutely right that, you know, the public take personal responsibility. I don't like, you know, our lives being policed. I'll be very, very clear about that. We all have an individual, you know, personal responsibility to take. And I think the British public have been doing that throughout coronavirus. We have seen pockets, and I'm going to say this now, pockets of non-compliance, whether it's people holding raves, whether it's people holding mass gatherings, or, you know, being in groups of more than the permitted numbers, or venues where they're just not putting in COVID compliant measures. It's right that we tackle non-compliance.
Okay.
And it's not just down to the police, it's down to local councils, it's down to health and safety, it's down to trading standards. You know, we're seeing all these component parts come together to ensure that we can stop the spread of the virus. But it's right that we do that.
But you, as Home Secretary, your neighbours have a children's birthday party. I'll put this to Kurt Malthouse, one of your ministers, yesterday. If they refuse to break up the party, you'd call the police on them.
Well, I mean, I'm not interested in policing my neighbours. I'm interested in stopping the spread of the virus. And I would exercise...
Hold on a minute. So you accept that someone having a party, say, for seven people in their garden wouldn't actually have an effect on the spread of the virus, so it wouldn't be worth stopping?
Well, they're outdoors. They could be undertaking social distancing measures.
I'm sorry, Home Secretary. Under the law brought in by your government, that is a criminal offence.
I'm about to come onto the rule of six.
But you've just admitted that rule of six isn't actually about stopping the spread of the virus. So we've got a law in that affects our personal liberties that you don't actually think will stop the spread of the virus. Is that right?
It is right that we have, you know, and the police have actually asked for this, by the way. I mean, you mentioned
if the police have asked for it.
No. We've had discussions around policing, but also keeping this simple. And the rule of six is absolutely about that, being very clear to the public in terms of numbers of people that can come together. But obviously, it's right that we have social distancing measures and people, as I said, take personal responsibility as to how they conduct themselves.
No, I'm sorry, Priti Patel, you're contradicting yourself. If you're saying if people have got social distancing and people take personal responsibility, then they should be allowed to know that that it's OK for them not to face a criminal record if they have more than six people meeting in their garden.
Not. The rule of six is clear. This is about six people and no more.
And it doesn't allow personal responsibility and it doesn't take into account risk or social distancing.
Well, of course it will, because even if you're meeting with six people, you're going to be undertaking those measures on social distancing, you know, wearing masks, etc. and it's the right thing to do. And we should, you know, these features are now part of our day-to-day lives, Julia. You know, wearing a mask on the tube, when you go into the supermarket, when you're out and about. This has become our new normal.
Well, our new normal has been being able to meet outdoors because we know it's much safer. In Scotland, we can meet outside. You know, in Wales, you can still have up to 30 outside. In Northern Ireland, the rule of six only applies to indoors. But why in England is it inside and outside when we know people are safer outside?
Yeah, but we're also seeing the spread of this disease. And I think, Julia, when you look at even some of the data around the increase in coronavirus, you know, we've seen more imported cases, people travelling from abroad, coming back home. We're seeing different age groups now, younger people in particular, now being
younger, healthier people getting positive tests for coronavirus. Yes,
absolutely. Getting positive tests for coronavirus, but also they are still carriers and they can spread the disease.
Well, Carl Hennigan, Professor of Evidence-Based Medicine at Oxford, has questioned whether that is the case in terms of testing. Let's move on to testing if we can, because there's been a big issue of, you know, 200,000 testing capacity. We're testing far more than Spain and France, no doubt at all about that. But we were all told, going to go and get yourself tested if you've got any worries. Children at school can't go to school if you haven't got a negative test, if there's been an outbreak. We're now told don't get tested unless you've got symptoms. Which is it? Should we try and get ourselves tested or shouldn't we?
Well, we've said it from day one that if you are symptomatic, you should get a test. And we've also seen that throughout recent months as well, where we have lockdowns, you know, we have local lockdowns where clearly we've had spikes in coronavirus. More mobile testing has been made available. In fact, more home testing, more testing slots have been made available on a daily basis. And that's absolutely right that we get people tested if they are symptomatic and they're showing the signs of having coronavirus.
Okay. Can we also talk about something else under your remit, the migrant boats? This is something that was raised by the Brexit Party leader Nigel Farage over the summer. Another, you know, quite a few dozen boats arriving on our shores yesterday. We'd have been quarantining, you know, law-abiding British citizens returning to this country from holiday, from countries actually which have apparently a lower rate than some of our major cities have of coronavirus infections. We're forcing us to sort of go back into our homes to a certain extent and limiting our contact with other people. Meanwhile, we have dozens and dozens and dozens of illegal migrants turning up on our shore every single day. What is being done about that? Oh, I think we've rather conveniently just lost that line with Priti Patel. I don't know if we've able to get her back or not. We are not able to get her back. Apologies for that. I think actually we've gone over our time. So I don't. This is not the Home Secretary refusing to answer that question. Thanks for listening to the Julia Hartley Brewer Daily. If you liked what you heard, please subscribe and give me a good review. And don't forget to catch me on the Talk Radio Breakfast Show every weekday from 6:30 until 10.